Looks like me and Vincent caught you boys at breakfast. Sorry about that. What'd you have?
Hamburgers.
Hamburgers! The cornerstone of any nutritious breakfast.
To the first episode of the AirRaid.net podcast. I hope you enjoy it. Glad to have you download my show. Thanks. You have a very nice iPod. So this show is going to be, we're going to focus on tech, we're going to focus on politics, music, zombies, and all things nerd. And I hope you enjoy it. We probably won't focus too much on politics because some people have told me that I am an idiot savant without the savant parts when it comes to politics. So, without further ado, here we go. My wife and I, Maraid, we went to a show last night on Capitol Hill here in Seattle. A buddy of ours is in a band called Punch. And we went and checked out this show. And I gotta say, man, I was really impressed. I thought the music was great. So if you have a chance, if you're listening to this podcast and you're saying to yourself, oh, I need to find some new music, check out Punch. And there's actually an interesting story because they share the name with a guy who had a Punch MySpace page. And he tried to basically extort money out of the lead singer, Chris, of Punch the band. And Chris said, no, I'm a college student, I can't afford that. And so this guy basically made a Punch hate site on his MySpace page. And it's pretty funny. So you should check both of those things out. I believe it's the band website is myspace.com/punchmusic. And the hate website, if you want to go and check that out, is myspace.com/punch. So we're at the show last night, and we sat down, and we were sitting next to some people that we had never met before, namely this guy, Sean, who turned out to be a really, really funny guy, and I really enjoyed sitting next to him and just kind of talking with him. And he came up with this story about how a friend of his attends the University of Washington, or used to attend the University of Washington, and this guy Sean is straight, mind you. He's had the same girlfriend for the last 7 years. So he legally married his friend, who is also straight, to get a free gym membership at the UW. Cool guy.
Yeah, way cool.
Way cool. Way cool. So the man sitting next to me here at the same table, Nair, an old friend of mine.
Grebnador.
Nair. I always Grebnador. Get right. I always get his last name kind of messed up. So welcome to the show, Nair.
Thank you. Thanks
for coming on.
I'm really happy to be here.
Excellent. Yeah. It's good to have a close friend here for episode one.
Thanks, man.
So cheers.
A little warm.
We're drinking a little bit here. So yeah, if you hear me gulping stuff down, that's what's going on. Okay. So, Nair, I was looking around for kind of a weird piece of news to kind of get things started on episode number one of this already very, very popular podcast.
Yeah, it's got like 3 big fans right now.
Right. So I was looking around to find kind of a weird story, right? And I come across this thing on MSN.com about a man, 82-year-old Indian yogi. I'm probably going to butcher his name. It's Prahlad Jani, 82-year-old Indian yogi. Making headlines this week because for the past 70 years, he has had nothing to eat.
Nothing.
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 Absolutely nothing.
Huh.
He hasn't had any liquid to drink either.
No liquid. No food.
No food.
Nothing.
So some Indian military doctors. This is, of course, you know, according to this this article written by Brian Alexander of MSN.com. A group of Indian military doctors, I'm reading from the article now, put him under round-the-clock observation during a two-week hospital stay that ended last week, news reports say. During that time, he didn't ingest any food or water and remained perfectly healthy. So, I don't know about this, man. I tend to not believe this at all. 70 years, that's a long time.
That's a long time. I have a hard time going 70 minutes without ingesting something.
Right. Well, as you know, I'm a very big eater.
Yeah.
I love food.
I know.
Yeah. And, I mean, why even do this, though? Why?
I don't know.
What's the point? What's the point of, you know, even saying that you know, if this were to be true, this guy didn't eat or drink anything for 70 years, why? Great, dude. Good job.
Nice work. No food.
You didn't save that whale that died in Puget Sound the other day.
But if they ate whales, he probably would have saved a whale that he didn't eat.
That's a very good point.
That's true.
Very good point, Nair. I think this guy needs a double down.
Double down.
Yeah, you've heard of the double down, of course.
Yeah, you just told me about it.
I think I did before. You did, yeah, before the...
No bread, just chicken with bacon. And
deep-fried chicken with bacon, a piece of...
slathers of mayonnaise.
Yeah, some special sauce. Hmm. Looks like a delicious sandwich.
Yeah, it sounds good.
Yeah, that guy definitely needs a double down. That brings to an interesting point.
Copy.
So imagine yourself, you haven't eaten for 70 years, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing you eat, somebody hands you... Let's rewind a second. So at the 70-year mark, you're starving. You're finally, it's hitting you hard, man.
It's got you.
You're hungry.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, man, my cupboards are bare because I haven't eaten anything in 70 years.
Because he doesn't eat.
Yeah, my refrigerator, there's nothing in the refrigerator.
Nothing.
There's like...
He probably doesn't have a refrigerator.
You don't know that.
Well, why? What would he put in his refrigerator if he didn't eat?
Everybody has a refrigerator.
But
even yogis.
But what would the yogi have? And I mean, it's just
well, that's
like
a, this
hypothetical.
Is hypothetical here. Okay, so
okay.
Just listen.
Okay, okay. Speak when spoken to. I was already told. Okay.
So there's nothing in the refrigerator. There's nothing in the freezer except like a frozen package of peas. He's like, I'm not going to eat that. And then somebody comes through the door and they say, "Here, here, Prahlad. I brought you a double down, or even a Big Mac."
Oh, a Big Mac.
What do you think that would do to the insides of somebody who hasn't eaten for that long?
I think it would just stick in there and not move. I think that Big Mac or the double down would be there until this guy dies. If he's ever going to die, I mean, if he doesn't need food, wouldn't he then be defying the laws of physics and be like a supernatural being?
Right, right. He could be Iron Man, too.
He could be.
Yeah.
I mean.
I wonder if he has a spidey sense.
I don't know. It's a good
question. No, he doesn't. He doesn't have any spidey sense.
No spidey sense.
No. I'm reading the article right now.
Yeah,
he doesn't.
Copy.
There's nothing in there about it.
We'll just let everybody wait while you finish reading.
Right.
Are you done?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So Nair.
Yeah.
We've been friends for a while.
While.
Yeah. I brought you on this show because you are a firefighter.
Mm.
And I wanted to kind of bring you here and hear some stories from you.
Yeah.
You are a firefighter for the town of Luckby.
Luckby.
Washington.
Yes.
Just outside of Seattle, right?
Just outside of Seattle in the Luckby district of Lucky County.
Right.
Right.
Okay. So if you haven't figured it out already, listeners, Nair Grubnador is not this man's real name, and Luckby doesn't exist. However, the man we call Nair is a real firefighter.
And if you want to know the truth about that, Air tried to make an anagram out of the town I live in, but unfortunately he got the wrong town.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I pretty much just fucked it all up.
Yeah, butchered.
Yeah. So anyway, you are a firefighter. You started out as an EMT in Seattle, right?
I did. Yeah, I did.
What kind of stuff did you see? Like, give us kind of a synopsis of what you would see on a normal night of work as an EMT in Seattle.
Yeah, well, you know, normal is used with the quote thing. You know, I'm doing the little quote thing with my two fingers.
This is imaginary radio, so yes. So he did make
the quote
some
thing normal.
Yeah,
Seattle was interesting because, you know, one thing that I saw three times a day, at least there were at least three of them, was that phenomenon of the dude that walks around angry, walking and yelling, like cussing and. But he's not talking to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So one of those three guys would end up in our ambulance that night. And we would take them to Harborview, where they didn't know what to do with them. And then they would take them to, the West Seattle Psych, which was called Navos. I don't know what it stands for. But,
So you basically, you saw firsthand all the people that everybody else kind of tries to, like, cross the street when they see?
Yeah, I had to take their pulses and their blood pressures and, bring them where they didn't want to go against their will because, you know, they were told that they could not take care of themselves.
Right, right. So did you kind of enter into any sort of conversation with somebody like that?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Are they lucid at all?
For sure. Some of them were.
Do they recognize that you're talking to them?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends. You know, there depends. That is the new word for depends. Because
that,
depends sounds like adult diapers, so depends. It depends on the situation. That's how he would use that word.
Right.
There was all kinds. I mean, there were dudes that, like, you know, would be silent the whole ride, and you try to talk to them, and they'd, like, you know, wouldn't move when you went to take their vital signs. Uh-huh. And then all of a sudden, you know, we're almost there, and, you know, dude looked like Samuel Jackson, right? And all of a sudden he turns to me and just looks me right in the eyes, and he's like, I will oppose any psychological help, volunteer or otherwise.
And so at that point, were you like, man, will you be my friend?
I just said, okay, and I moved seats. You know, there's two seats in the ambulance. You got the bench next to the bed, and then you got a seat at the head. So I moved to the seat at the head. And right when I moved, my partner, who, you know, your partner really makes that job, right? He looks at me, and he goes, hey, you might want to check the seatbelts. You know, because he was restrained and stuff with the seatbelts and so on. I gave a quick look, and everything was looking okay.
So wait a minute. Is this the partner that's actually driving the ambulance?
Yeah, he's driving. Oh, okay. He's listening. Okay.
I thought it might have been somebody that's sitting next to you. It's like, I'm not going to check those seatbelts.
Hey, no.
Hey, Nair.
Yeah.
Check those seatbelts, will you?
He actually tells a story about he and his other partner who, you know, my partner, will call him MB. He was in the back with a guy, and his partner was outside talking to the police, and the police, you know, told him something, and he passed a little note back to MB. It said, I think he just might have killed somebody. Yeah.
Really?
So, yeah. But luckily they'd given the guy enough drugs and stuff that he was just toasty McNoodle, nothing, gorked out.
So, wow. So, yeah. I mean,
they were moving him from Harborview after, like, a psych admit, right?
Yeah.
And taking him to, I think, Western State was the destination there.
Wow.
Yeah. It's amazing. There's a lot of those transports. There's a lot of people. I mean, I would say out of, if we did 12 calls in a night, you know, two, maybe three of them would be like psych patients going somewhere.
Right, right. Well, so, I mean, not every story that you have is a funny one.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of serious stuff that happens out there in the city. And so what is, you know, on seeing, you don't have to talk about any of these stories, but seeing some of the kind of the heavier shit, what does that do to your psyche?
Well, seeing some, for me, really, it just, you know, at first I was kind of blown away because I'm just like a little city boy, you know, in the big city seeing the real, real deal, you know. And I don't know, I kind of got, like, I kind of enjoyed it in a way because it was an opportunity to take a situation that was out of control and be able to, you know, maybe use my people skills or, like, my EMT skills to bring a situation into control. Mm-hmm. And so, for me, it doesn't really affect me because I know I'm out there trying to do it in order to, like, you know, make things a little better. So, even when something's really bad, it's like my part in it is to make it a little better. Mm-hmm. But there's some... I'll have to say, the saddest situations I saw was, like, the quality of life of some people. I mean,
right.
You know, like, taking people to dialysis who, like, have one leg that doesn't work and sores all over it. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. their life is sitting in a bed being transported to and from dialysis, you know.
Wow.
And you get to know them. There's, like, regulars. When you have a regular shift, they go on certain days at certain times. And it got to the point where you'd be like... You would first hear the call go out for you guys, and you would go, okay, that's Debbie or whatever. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And so, like...
You know the address. You know how to get there.
You know, we know who it is. We know the age.
With something like that, like somebody who just needs to go to dialysis, is that considered an emergency, or they basically just need a ride?
No, they need a ride. They need a medical transport. Because,
so that's actually scheduled.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's two types of... Like, the ambulance, a lot of people don't know how it works, right?
Right,
I mean, the
right.
fire department goes, and then a private ambulance company that charges...
Like AMR, which
like
is...
Like AMR,
yeah.
which, you know, all of them charge an astronomical fee. I don't know, you know, medical costs are what they are. I don't know why it's so much. I mean, so many times people could have just gone on their own. But lots of times they do need that transport because they need oxygen or they need the resources available right there because we have radios, right? Boom.
Right.
What was the question? I don't remember where we were going with that.
Well, we originally were talking about how something like that, you know, seeing some of the stuff that you've seen being an EMT, you know, how that kind of
it's
doesn't mess you up, basically. I mean, you know, do you dream about that kind of stuff or?
I mean, sure. There's
post-traumatic stress disorder kind of things, you know.
I mean. You know, I'm sure there's some calls that really get you, but usually the ones, you know, in talking to, like, buddies and stuff that do it, I mean, it's like the ones that always get people are the ones that remind them of, like, their family.
Right.
Or their wife or some situation they can really relate to.
Yeah. Well, I guess, too, like, you were just talking about how you guys would go on kind of regular calls to transport these people to, you know, dialysis or whatever they need to go to. And you probably, like you said, you get to know those people, right?
Oh, yeah.
You might get a little bit emotionally attached to some of those people.
Yeah, a little bit. Right. Like one guy, you know, Mr. Cobb, we'll call him, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was just a cranky dude and, you know, big, good-looking guy, but he got hit by a car 10 years ago, ended up getting diabetes. He's paralyzed.
Wow.
You know, and we got to move him, and so he had to be... You know, he had to go on dialysis and everything, and he liked 98.9 smooth jazz. Is that what it is?
I don't know.
Whatever. That's what he liked. That, like, calmed him down. He wasn't cranky. And then he'd, like, open up and tell us the whole story, you know. And then he died. I mean, you know, complications.
In your truck?
No, not in the truck. You just hear he died, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
What'd he do? Stop getting the call for him, hear through the grapevine or whatever.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, because, I mean, you always see these TV shows, and it seems like we're going through another influx of, like, health responder.
Yeah, for sure.
Or emergency responder TV shows. Like, there's that one out there, Mercy, which, I gotta say, bugs the living crap out of me.
I haven't seen Mercy.
I can't stand it. So, the basis of it is there's this woman, she's a nurse, at some hospital, Mercy Hospital, I think is what it is.
That's the name.
Right.
Copy.
Right. And so this woman, very attractive blonde, of course.
Oh, she's attractive on TV?
Oh, yeah, of course.
That's weird.
It's weird. Yeah.
No. Do they have, like, the 300-pound nurse that's really good too in there. No.
Yeah. No. Yeah. The resident fatty.
Yeah, the resident chubby nurse. There's always one, and they're always like the best nurses.
Yeah, yeah. They always know the most.
Yeah.
They but do. They're not attractive.
No.
So it doesn't matter.
Which is all right. You love them anyway.
Right.
You know? I mean, whatever. Go ahead. Yeah. Continue.
Okay. I thank you. This is my show.
This is.
So you always, what was I talking about? Mercy.
Mercy.
So young, attractive, blonde nurse going through PTSD because she was a nurse in Iraq or whatever.
Right.
Horribly, horribly written, horribly acted.
Yeah.
You know, but you always, what made me think of this topic to talk with you about is, you know, you see these TV shows, and there's always this emotional element, right, to you know, somebody in the hospital or somebody in the ambulance that is dying, you know. And in some of these shows, it's more of like this adrenaline rush.
Right.
Right. So would you say that you get this adrenaline rush doing that kind of work?
Yeah, sure. But it's like few and far between.
Most of it is more methodical and it's more step by step by step.
Well,
right?
I wouldn't call anything like methodical. It's all case by case, you know. If you like care about your patients and whatnot, you like get to know them. And when you get to a point where like your exam and your questioning and stuff all becomes one thing, it's like a personal. You know, you get to know somebody really quick, and by getting to know them, you understand their problems because we're there, you know, to help them. So usually they want to share.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but those, like, when somebody's actually dying right in front of you, I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, that's like, that's pucker time, dude. I mean, you know what I mean? I'm making the little symbol with my index finger and my thumb where it looks like a crevice. You know what I mean?
We won't go further into that. Yeah.
You pucker. I mean, it's like, oh, you know, we got to do something now.
Right, right. But in most situations, you know, even if it's a dire situation, would you say that, you know, you're thinking clearly?
Yeah.
Right. It's not this fight or flight kind of thing.
I mean,
you know,
once again,
you've got the training to go in there and be like, okay, well, this is the situation. This is what we need to do. You know, and more of this, you know, the kind of the television aspect of things is like, we've got this situation now. Not only are you a paramedic, but you're also a warrior, you know?
Yeah.
And you got to fight off this gang.
Right.
And
get this guy to the hospital. That would be exciting. I mean, it would kind of be, you know, kind of be cool. I mean, in a way, you know, it's like, wow, that would be neat. But does it ever happen? I mean, you know, 1 in 1,000 calls you go on,
right?
You know?
Well, and then another show that they have, and I can't remember what it's called right now. I think it's on NBC.
Trauma. I saw the first two, and then we just made fun of it. We watched it at the station because we were like, okay, what's this about?
And
we just,
right. And this is the one where they always airlift somebody out of
always.
A situation,
and they're landing in like
on the
downtown,
highway,
whatever, in their
right.
helicopter. Okay.
Yeah,
yeah. What's a helicopter? You know, when helicopters are really used, it's when people are far away from the hospital.
Exactly.
If you're in a big city, it's an easy ambulance ride there. Why would you chopper them in?
Well, and that guy, that plays the pilot.
Isn't the girl the pilot? I thought the girl was
no,
the
I
pilot.
Thought the guy was the
no,
pilot.
No, I think the guy's like
the
paramedic.
Guy?
Yeah, the Indian guy's like the paramedic. He's like the medic guy on it. And the hot little bombshell, she flies it.
Oh,
she's
really?
She's the flyer. She's just like an EMT or something.
Yeah.
That happens to fly a helicopter.
A helicopter, yeah.
Which is kind of hot. I mean,
well,
you know.
Yeah, a lot can be said for hot pilots.
Hot helicopter.
EMT pilots.
EMT
right.
pilots, yeah. So,
so let's move on a little bit now. So you started out as an EMT.
Mm-hmm.
No.
I started out as a camp counselor. I know, that's later. He gave me the fucking finger. Oh, pardon. I didn't mean to. Anyways, I was a teacher, too. I just wanted to get that.
Yes,
in there.
He was a teacher before he was an EMT.
Yeah.
So now you're a firefighter.
Yes.
Okay, you made the switch.
Made the switch.
Into fighting flame.
Yep. went exactly as planned. I was teaching, and I said, I want to be a firefighter. I'm going to get my EMT, become an EMT for a while, and then get hired. I was 6 days off of my goal.
You were literally.
Yeah.
I'm
not joking. I have it written down in one of my journals. In 2006, I wrote, I will be a paid firefighter by October of 2008. And I got, you know, the call to get hired November 6th of 2008. It's pretty cool.
Right?
Yeah.
It's
neat. I mean, it's cool. I think it's cool. I like it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Excellent. So you're a firefighter for this town of Luckby?
Luckby.
So why don't you explain to us a little bit, like, what a firefighter does?
What we do?
Yeah.
Well, what we don't do is sit around the station and wait for a fire.
That's exactly what I was going for.
Okay.
Because a lot of people, and you said this when we were kind of going through the plan for the show.
Right.
And you made a comment that, you know, can I say that, you know, we just don't sit around in our off time waiting for a fire, sitting in our lazy boys?
Yeah. We show up and we buy a paper on the way to work and then go to Starbucks and get the other paper and then get our coffee and go back to the station and sit in the Barca loungers and wait for a fire.
No, well, you guys do much more than that. So why don't you, you know...
Let's just look
let
at
the
it.
Good people, let the good citizens of the internet know.
Okay.
What a typical day.
Citizens of the internet.
Firehouse is like.
I hereby proclaim that we as firefighters have kind of a lot to do. I mean, think about it. Everybody, you know, has got their house and their, you know, cars and, you know, their lawnmower and, you know, there's maintenance that needs to be done on those little things, right?
So you're not just sitting around in your Barca loungers. You're actually mowing lawns.
No. Ouch. Ouch. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Ah, damn. Okay, so think about it. We have, like, you know, our particular Luckby firemen. Mm-hmm. We have approximately, 16 pieces of apparatus, right? You know, trucks, you know, big pumpers, tenders, aid cars, right? I mean, we have all these pieces of apparatus, and... They get driven hard. They get driven by a lot of different people, and they break down all the time, right?
Right.
Well, on each of those things, there are massive amounts of equipment, right? Mm-hmm. That equipment breaks down and stuff. And, you know, we have a bunch of volunteers at our station, right? And they have all their own gear and equipment, and their equipment breaks. So we take care of all that all day long. I'm making calls to people about fixing equipment. I'm fixing little pieces of equipment. We're painting stuff. We're keeping up on the station.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we do mow the lawn.
So you do have a lawn?
We do have a little lawn.
Is there a tire swing in your backyard?
There is no tire swing. There is no tree. You would need a
You don't have any trees
tree.
In Luckby? Have they all been burnt down?
There's just no trees by the fire station in Luckby, Washington.
Okay. So, I mean, that's all fine and good.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of we have a lot of tours, too, which I quite enjoy. Like
you do?
Tours. Like, we get kindergarten classes, Cub Scout classes, other classes, you know, and preschool classes are the funnest because you got the
MILFs.
So, you know, they're always tagging along. And
right on.
They seem to enjoy the tour as much as the kids do.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you would say that a typical day at a firehouse is probably not like a montage that you would see in like Ladder 49 with Joaquin Phoenix.
No, it's not. We're busy. I mean,
that's
we're
too
busy
bad.
From. I mean, here's how it works. Okay, just let me tell you how it works.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
From like, you know, 8 to 5 in our schedule, usually like 8 to 7 because we have a hard time getting stuff done. We have what's called our productive hours.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be like working on stuff, which we need all that time to get all the stuff that we need to get done, right? My particular shift is in charge of like training, and so there's just a ton of stuff. We have, you know, 50 members to train, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we take care of all that and... Once again, I'm not remembering the exact question that I'm responding to.
Well, I'd say you're explaining basically what a typical firefighter does on a given day.
Yeah.
So I mean, because there's a lot of people, like you said, out there that are
firefighters are
lazy. Yeah. There's not a fire all the time.
Right.
So what the hell are they
doing? We had a guy shout at us the other day, get a real job.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Shout at firefighters to get a real job?
Yeah. Yeah. it was pretty offensive, you know.
That's, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So that could have been me, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes it's like, you know, you're doing all these tasks at the station, you know, cleaning, you know, inspecting things, buying new things that need to be replaced, and you get a call and you're like, dang it, I was almost done with that task.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the calls are the fun part, really, for me. I mean, we enjoy serving people. That's why we do what we mm-hmm. do. You know,
do you get many cats out of trees?
I have never had a call for a cat in a tree. I did have a call last night, in fact, for a kid that wouldn't take his medication.
Mm-hmm. They called the fire department.
They called the fire department. They called 911. So we responded to a kid whose brother got more computer time than he did, so he was throwing a fit and wouldn't use his insulin pump to push insulin into his body so that
he had some sort of power.
Well, we kind of did a little good cop, bad cop thing on him. Like, I took the mom aside and got the information and said, hey, what's going on here? And my partner was like, oh, buddy, why don't you want to do your insulin? You know, and all sweet to him, kind of established a rapport. And then I walked in and I just, you know, had to give him the what for.
So you basically just walked in the room, stuck him with the needle.
No. He had a pump. He had a pump. He has an insulin pump.
Oh, okay,
That calculates how much, you know, insulin he needs based on what his sugars were, right? So I just had to be like, look, dude, here's the deal. This is your body. What I understand is going on is you're using your health to gain power to look at the computer. You know, what do you want to do? Look at some, you know, bikini girls or talk on Facebook? I like talking to people. Well, that's great, dude. Take your insulin. Let's get this going right now, please. And so he did.
Right.
I mean, he did, you know. Great. Thanks, buddy. All right.
You've kind of had that power over over the little ones.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah. So, I mean, so of course they're not all stories like that, too. Can you tell us a little bit, like, more intense stories that you've, or intense calls that you've
had? Yeah. I mean, it's a crazy deal, man. This guy was like, he just was kind of folded up and like was semi-conscious. He wasn't really talking and he was like really in distress, right? Breathing. And we could not figure out what was going on. And so we brought some medics in. Like, I'm just an EMT. We bring medics in King County. You get the paramedics coming.
Right.
It's a tiered system, right?
Now, are you talking, this is when you're a firefighter?
This is a firefighter now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So are all firefighters are EMTs?
In King County, yeah, for sure.
Oh, okay.
And you know, that might not be true necessarily, but technically that's the way it's supposed to be.
Okay.
You're a firefighter, EMT. That's what you do.
Interesting.
Then the paramedics are kind of on a separate system.
Okay.
Okay. So, anyways, this guy, you know, they couldn't figure out, and the medics come, and, you know, they didn't know, and they're like, all right, well, we'll take him. And they were going to take him to a smaller hospital, and then decided they wanted to tube him, but apparently they
tube him.
What does that mean? Like, you knock him out. They actually give him this stuff called vecuronium. Vecuronium, I think, is it just paralyzes your body, right?
Right.
And then they shove a tube down into your lung.
And that's the what's that called?
Intubation. They intubate him. Yeah, tube him. We say tube him, right?
And then that comes with the little. There's this little apparatus, right, that actually holds the tongue down?
Yeah, it's rare that we use those, actually.
Really?
Yeah, oral pharyngeal airways. They also have nasal pharyngeal airways. And if you ever saw one, yeah, they look like nipple. We call them nipple cannulas because they like kind of look like a reverse nipple if you flip them over. And then, you know, so we joke around. Nipple cannula, stat. it's a joke. Sorry.
So on your free time, you're coming up with, lewd
No, we do that while words. We work. We do that while we work. Actually, that's kind of a way that, you know, you decompress a little bit sometimes is you kind of joke around about stuff.
Right.
Yeah, you kind of have to, I suppose. Anyways, let me finish.
Yes.
Bottom line is, he started like, yeah.
This is my show.
Bottom line is, he started like, you know, he couldn't breathe, and they couldn't get the tube in him. He had some scar tissue from a previous trach, and you know, like, they pulled a feeding tube out of his mouth one time because it went all bad and scarred him up. So they couldn't get the tube in him. So they just like, they did like an emergency cracheotomy on him.
That's where they cut through his throat.
Oh yeah, they just sliced it open, and he was on like a blood thinner, so it was like going everywhere, and it. It was kind of neat. I mean, they saved his life by doing it, right? You know, I mean, it was wild. I mean, you're just sitting there watching it.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, it was. It's interesting stuff.
That's pretty intense.
Yeah, and that's intense. I just make a side note?
Like, yeah.
I had a guy's intestine in my hand the other day because he had a colostomy bag and accidentally, like, caught it on something and yanked the the top off and like exposed like 16 inches of intestine, and the end of an intestine. Looks and feels, but I don't really know if it feels because I've never felt one, but it's like a uncircumcised penis.
Way to clear a room.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. Intestines, like the
but
end
it's
of
wet.
It.
It's moist, right? It's slimy?
Moist.
Is it slimy?
Not, kinda, but not really. I mean,
was this your bare hand?
No, I had a glove on.
Okay.
I had to, like, lift them up out of the, you know, they were in poop, right? I
mean, right, right.
Poop comes out of
intestines. Oh, no. So you had to clean his intestine
off
before you
kind of
put it back into
the
body?
No, you don't put it back in because it's, like, contaminated. That's, like, you'll get all septic and infected and stuff. So you got to, like, just pack it with a moist dressing, right? As it is, don't push any back in, and then he's got to get to the hospital, and they've got to clean him and, like, I guess surgically do it. So,
whoa.
Yeah, it's wild.
So this whole time that you're holding this guy's intestine, are you at the same time going, dude, I'm so sorry. I am so sorry.
Well, it doesn't hurt him because, like, you know, as far as sensation on an intestine, it's not on the outside.
Right, so he doesn't have any...
No pain.
There's no pain to
doesn't
it.
Doesn't feel any pain.
Even when it comes through, like, because you said you caught on something on this bag that he was wearing.
He said he had no pain.
And it pulled it out.
Yeah.
Like, even through the opening in his side, it didn't hurt.
I don't think so. That's something that's been open for a long time, and they have, you know... I don't know all the mechanics of, you know, a bag like that, a colostomy bag, I guess
is what it is,
you know. I don't know how it all works. It just had a ring, and there was this chunks of intestine coming out.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, I think on that note,
we
should go to a musical break.
Let's do it.
This is great. This is good. This is good stuff here.
Yeah.
This is good stuff.
Quality.
Yeah.
Choice.
So, we're going to play one of my favorite songs out there. It's an older song. It's off the album XO by Elliot Smith. It's called Baby Britain.
Fights problems with bigger problems. Sees the ocean falling eyes. Counts the waves as somehow. Say hi.
but it was dead. Revolver's been turned over, and now it's ready once again. The radio was playing Crimson and Clover. London Bridge is safe and sound. No matter what you keep repeating, nothing's gonna drag me down to a death that's not worth cheating for. Someone half a swore you'd be a work of art. You put yourself apart, and I can't help until you start.
All right, welcome back. Hope you're still with us. So when we left, we were still talking about what it was like, or what it is like being a firefighter, and some of the stories you had. I wanted to mention something that you've done, which I think is absolutely amazing. Doing the Columbia Tower run.
Yeah, it's called the Firefighter Stair Climb.
The Firefighter Stair Climb, yeah. In downtown Seattle.
Yeah.
And is it still – it's the Columbia Tower, right?
Or is
they
do it on
the first tower now or something like that?
I don't know. It's that big black one.
Yeah, it's the tallest building in Seattle.
Yeah.
So you guys actually – and it was it's a bunch of you get together and you race to the top.
Yeah.
From the ground floor to the top of the
– I mean, if you can call it a race, a lot of people – you know, just take their time, say they've done it. But there's definitely a huge competitive side. And when I did it, it was when I was a rookie going through, like, an academy. And, you know, like, I didn't know how to pace or whatever. But I did pretty well. But there's guys that do it in, like, 11 minutes.
11 minutes?
Yeah,
How many stories is it?
It's
69.
Thank God. Yeah, it's 69 flights, and I mean it was cool. I definitely dug doing it. It was a good workout. I did something like 18:29, which was really fair. I mean, it's a really fair time. But there's guys that just like, I mean, I don't know how they do it. I don't understand how it's physically possible to take 7 minutes off of what I did and get way down there like that. These guys just
fly up. That's amazing. So is this – do you guys actually do that with all your equipment on?
Yeah, everything.
You do?
Yeah, like your
– oh, my God.
Your SCBA, okay. Your mask.
See, that's even more amazing than I thought it was before.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool, man. And I think you should – that's something to be real proud of, doing something like that.
The worst part, like, it wasn't like the physical activity. You know, I stay in pretty good shape. I mountain bike and run and do a lot of hiking and stuff and ski and whatnot. But, like, it's the heat. It's the heat that makes it so hard, because you got your full bunker gear on and your pack, and you're just roasting in there.
Oh, I bet.
I mean, your bunker gear protects from heat, but it also keeps in a lot of heat.
Oh,
too.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So, and how many guys are doing that?
I don't know. They like cut them off last year.
Really?
I didn't do it last year. I signed up too late. I mean, once it opens up, it just fills up. There's guys from like New Zealand and. You know, there's a big crew from Montana, and these guys from Montana just are kind of like working it pretty good. And lots of the Seattle guys are really good at it.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So we met a while ago.
Wild. 1999, I believe.
Yes. Yeah, 1999. So that would make it, what, 11 years?
Mm-hmm.
11 years we've been.
11 years.
Close friends.
Yeah.
So I started going to college. I met this guy, Sam, who is actually the designer of the website at www.air-raid.net.
Plug.
So please check that out.
Plug.
He's done a great job. I just got to, got to give props to Sam, because he's an amazing artist.
Yeah.
Good at what he does. So I met this guy, Sam. Sam's kind of a little out there. Back then.
Yeah, for sure.
And he talked me into taking this class. I was a freshman in college, mind you. He talked me into taking this 400 level philosophy class called
Philosophy 420 is what it was called.
Was it?
I don't know. It should have been, I guess.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Varieties of Consciousness.
Yeah.
With Chester Z. Keller.
Chester Z. Keller. May he rest in peace, by the way. He's probably listening.
He's gone.
Yeah.
When did that happen?
You didn't hear he died?
No.
Oh, yeah, he died. I don't know. It's been a couple of years. I thought we'd talked about it. But, yeah, I asked somebody at the university or whatever. Yeah, one of my old art profs.
Wow.
He died.
Well, he lived a very, very long life. He was, when he was teaching that class 11 years ago, how old was he then? 80?
80-something, breaking podiums with his fist and
this
stuff.
Guy was a firecracker. And he was bald on top, but he had kind of this weird thing going on with his hair because he was bald. He didn't have a comb over.
No.
But his hair was cut very short.
Yeah.
But he had like two or three hairs in the back of his head that were literally you could put them in a ponytail because they were so frickin' long. And those things would hang down and it was just the weirdest thing.
And pop up sometimes and like they would straight pop, up over the top of his head.
Yeah.
I got spit on a bunch of times sitting in the front.
Right. Yeah. That was a crazy class. So I was a freshman taking this 400 level senior level class. I didn't know how to write a college paper at all. And this class basically, it almost ruined my college career.
Yeah.
Because I was in there, I was trying as hard as possible to write a good paper.
Yeah.
But the things we were talking about in there, I was such a skeptic on. Like you know, we were talking about levitation, you know, using your mind.
Healing.
And, oh, boy.
Stuff,
all sorts of weird crap. Yeah. And I was very, very skeptical about this. Yeah. And I would actually portray that in my papers.
Right.
And I think that's why I did so bad.
Yeah, I'm sure. If you refute the professor's view in a paper.
I learned that. I learned that my first quarter in college.
Good lesson.
Yeah, no kidding.
Good lesson.
Well, I finally, when we had the final paper, I finally was like, yes, this stuff is amazing.
Great. You know?
And he gave me a passing grade.
Yeah. Yeah, nice.
Which I didn't really deserve anyway.
What was that grade?
Oh, man, I think I got like a D.
Yeah, but you went in and talked to him.
I did. I went in and talked to him. I said, hey, look, I'm very afraid of failing this course. I know that you gave me a shot and let me in this thing.
Yeah. Yeah,
I can't.
I got an A in that class
my first year,
like flying colors A. By the way,
yeah,
because I understood not to refute the professor's view.
Well, yeah, you're older than I am, and you had been in college for 8 years.
Eight at that time, something six at least. So really,
right? You did a little jumping
and
around.
I'm not a doctor,
and you're not a doctor.
Yeah, I'm not a doctor.
Yeah. Yeah, that is for sure.
But I did take a lot of classes that I wanted to take.
You did. And that school was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. So after meeting you in this class, we became very close friends, hung out quite a bit. And you ended up getting me a job at a horse ranch.
Horse
in
ranch.
In Eastern Washington with you.
Yes.
And we shared a room.
12 by 12 room.
Yeah. Which was a lot of fun. It was really cool. It was a summer camp for kids. We had a lot of great times out there. Met a lot of really cool people,
for sure.
But there was some pretty strange stuff that happened out there.
Yeah.
And why don't I'll let you tell the story of the ghost.
Well, Roden and I used to do what we like to call a tandem. Okay, we had some toilet stalls And we would go in at the same time and take our, you know, we call it Ticton. That's like our code word as firefighters, Ticton. Oh, dude, it smells like Ticton in here. So you're not, you know, embarrassing the patient.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you can just give a little alert, Ticton.
Ticton?
Ticton. Ticton, dude, Ticton. So they know, whatever.
Yeah.
So anyways, we go in to do that, and all the kids are asleep. It's you know, balls dark in the room, I walk in first, and I sit down, and, you know, I hear Roden come in, and Roden's coming in, and this little flashlight beam is on the ground, and it comes in between my legs and goes into Roden's stall. Sweet, you know, okay. And then there was a magazine, I think it was like a Car and Driver, which I didn't care about Car and Driver, but I think I was already done crapping at that time. I just wanted to sit in there with Roden during our tandem. So I said, Roden, hey, pass me your flashlight, dude.
And he's like, dude, I don't have a flashlight. And I'm like, what was that beam on the ground? Dude, just pass me your flashlight. And he's like, dude, I don't have a flashlight. I thought that was your flashlight. I was like, that's not my flashlight.
Yeah, it was a little hair-raising.
Right.
Yeah. And that was not the first time that kind of stuff happened.
Actually, that was the first time.
That was the first time we saw it.
Yeah.
There's other people around there that saw
right.
it, too.
Right.
And we also got the rare experience of actually seeing the Northern Lights out there.
Yes.
Which was absolutely amazing.
Oh.
We were sleeping one night.
Aren't there like some Indian drums kind
yeah,
of
there
going
was
on
a,
that we
Yeah,
could
somebody
hear?
Was having a drum circle
yeah,
at
something.
The time. And
I don't know where,
it was
though.
Weird. You could
yeah.
hear it off in the distance. Yeah. But so
wild.
One of the other ranch workers or camp counselors, if you will, ran into our bunk at probably around, I don't know, 3 o'clock in the morning
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and woke us up and was really freaked out. I mean, he was, you know, this kind of stuff didn't happen in Eastern Washington very often, and a lot of people have never seen it.
Yeah.
And he was pretty freaked out. His girlfriend was even more freaked out. Do you remember? She was thinking it was, you know.
Like the apocalypse.
Yeah, the apocalypse or yeah. aliens or something were coming yeah. down. And so we wake up, and he's like, hey, something weird is going on out in the woods. And it's really freaking us out. You guys got to come here and check this out. So we get out of bed. All the kids are sleeping in the bunkhouse. Get out there. And through the trees, you look up the hill through the trees, and there's light just coming through the trees.
Yeah.
You know, shining through the branches.
And like
branches.
These wavering patterns of
right, right.
craziness.
And it was just, I mean, it was awe-inspiring is
yeah,
what it was.
It was.
And it kind of reminded me of E.T., you
yeah.
know, when the ship
yes.
lands or the ship takes
yes.
off and you can see it through the woods and it's, like, coming, it's shining.
Yep.
You know, it looked like somebody was back there with a bunch of headlights and they were just, like, turning them on and off yeah. and on and off and on and off. And
except
on
for
on.
There was more of a mystical, wavy,
well, remember that's how it started. And then
right.
all of a sudden it shot over the sky like
got
a
me.
Huge mm-hmm. white sheet. Shot over
wow.
the sky, and it's just this big waving white
yeah,
sheet
so
in the sky.
Weird.
And it was absolutely beautiful.
Amazing.
And I've never seen anything like that since. So there was quite a bit of crazy things.
I mean, there's another. I'll just tell it real quick just to get
what's,
through it.
Yeah, what's that?
You weren't there, I don't think. I think it was the year before you got there. We were laying on our backs looking at the stars. I was with Aaron. Right,
uh-huh,
laying
uh-huh.
there, checking out the stars, and looking at this bright star, and all of a sudden the star starts moving. And it, like, slinks across the sky in, like, this S pattern. And I said something, I'm like, hey, do you guys see that there? And the thing's moving, and everybody's like, uh-huh. And then it goes, and you know where that campsite was? Well, there's those trees right behind it,
mm-hmm.
and then it went in between those trees and another bank of trees behind it.
Right.
The light came
right.
down. In front of other land, and then we didn't see anything after
wow.
that.
Wow.
Yeah. What? Yeah.
I think I just pooped my pants.
Yeah, I... Yeah. I hear you. It moistened my chute a little bit, I'll tell you that. Really did.
Moistened your chute.
Moistened my chute.
Yeah. So us living together in that small mm-hmm. room had some consequences.
Yeah.
I, you know, personally...
He's a clean guy.
I'm a very, very... clean person. I like things to be ordered and put away and organized. Nair here is a very dirty, dirty man. You're a dirty boy.
I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, it was always a problem when I was growing up. Clean your room, Nair. And, you know, I'd spend time in there playing with things and not clean it for hours. You can't
yeah.
come out of your room until you're done cleaning. Well, all my toys were in my room, man. What did I care?
Well, I mean, this came along with you as your journey to manhood.
Yeah, really.
And you actually told me on your way up here today that you couldn't stay for very long because you had to get back. Your fiance is coming back from vacation.
Yep.
And your words exactly were, and the house is just fucked up.
Yeah. Trashed, I think, was... Dude, the house is trashed, man, so...
So I would like to go into a new semi-irregular segment.
Okay, man.
That I like to call "What Would Nair Do?"
What would Nair do?
Yeah. And I'm sorry, I don't have anything queued up, like any sound effects or anything like that, because you
like
know,
a crashing just, sound or something.
We're a brand new podcast here. You can't expect the world here. Okay. So I'm going to come to you with an example of, you know, maybe a food stuff.
Okay.
Or a dirty article of clothing.
Sure.
And you're going to give me your answer.
Okay.
As near what you would do with that thing.
Okay.
Okay.
Good.
That dirty, dirty thing.
Good. Go.
Okay, so let's say you have a plate of nachos, Nair.
Copy.
All right.
Nachos.
You eat half of those nachos. Mm-hmm. It's 11:30 at night. You have to work in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do with the leftover plate of nachos?
Go. Set it down.
Set it down?
It's probably already down. I would just leave it there. I was being dramatic. Set it down, meaning like, it's good.
Okay. You know? How long would that, what would you, I mean, you set it down, then what?
I go to bed.
Okay. How long would that plate stay there?
I'm tired. The plate would stay there as long as I knew nobody was coming over. What do I care? It's a plate of nachos
weeks.
On the table.
It'd stay there for weeks.
Well, hey, I have a lot of people over. It would stay there until, like, I moved it to a different table, like an end table, when I wanted to, like, work on a drawing or something, or I was writing a little ditty for my guitar or something. It would need to get out of the way, because some things I just don't want that cheesy grease on, so I just move it over.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, okay. So next one.
Next
one. That was a good answer. Good answer.
Yeah. Honest.
Okay. You're watching your favorite movie.
Copy.
On television. Earlier in the day, you had some tacos from the taco wagon.
Tacos.
Okay.
Yep.
Your favorite movie is a comedy.
Yeah.
You're laughing very hard. And you shart yourself.
I shart. That's an immediate fix. For me, I...
Okay.
That's an immediate fix.
Immediate fix. Okay. You didn't let me finish because I was going to say, you go in, you take your, you know, soiled article of clothing off.
Right.
What do you do with that soiled article of clothing?
Ooh. Well, I roll it up real tight and stash it somewhere, dude. What do you think? You know, I mean, I don't want the vapors to escape.
You put it somewhere nobody can find it.
Or I just throw them away, you know. What do I care? It's a pair of underwear. I mean, hopefully I didn't, like, shart through the chones and into my pants.
Okay, what if it happened? What if that happened? What if you went through your favorite pair of pants?
Favorite pair of pants?
Favorite pair of pants.
Oh, well, I would, if it was my favorite pair, which is a pair of, like, these old, you know, pants I got at REI that I cut off to make them like capris, and they're just lightweight and yeah, capris, dude. I like
capris?
They're coming back. I'm gonna bring them back
on men.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And anyways, I would take care of those favorite pair. I mean, if it was a pair that like I wore every once in a while, just throw them away. Who cares, dude? I get most of my stuff at Goodwill just because. I don't know. There's cool stuff like this shirt.
That's a nice shirt. It's got a horse on it.
Yeah.
It says Endurance.
Yeah. I actually wore it because it reminded me of the horseback riding camp.
Oh.
And you. And Curly.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, well, I think, you know what? I think that does it for
That's
the
it?
Show today.
You don't have one more of those things? It's kind of fun.
No.
I learned a lot about myself. No.
We're done.
Fine.
We're done here.
All right.
So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for downloading the show. We got a lot of great guests lined up. We're going to try to do this show every Saturday, and you can download the show on iTunes or Zune Marketplace, or you can tap into our RSS feed at our website, which is www.air-raid.net. Please check out the site. Send us emails if you have show ideas or if you got music that you'd like to send us to play on the air, because I don't know how long we're going to be able to play these songs we got before we get a cease and desist order. So anyway, we had a lot of fun today.
Yeah, we did.
Thank you, Nair, for coming on the show.
Dude, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right. And we're going to go out with a fitting song of the day. which is another one of my favorite songs. And it is called Stereo by Pavement. Enjoy.
They tend to wiggle when they walk. The infrastructure rots, and the owners hate the jocks with their agents and their dates. If the signature's a check,
you'll just have to wait.
And we're counting up the instants that we save. Tired nations so depraved. From the cheap seats, see us wave to the camera. It took a giant ramrod to raise the demon settlement. But hi-ho, silver ride.
I know him, and he does.
And you're my fact-checking cub.